Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 20th of April. As promised, this hour we analyze the results of yesterday's primary in New York. The front runners had big victories, and we ask the question, has it reduced the field to Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton? In New York, Donald Trump had his biggest win ever. He passed the 50% threshold for the first time with 60% of the vote. Hillary Clinton had a very large win and now needs just a little over 40% of the remaining delegates to secure that 2,383 majority. I think it's worth talking about the numbers here because they're interesting, and particularly when you compare them with Wisconsin. There were 2,817,780 votes. There might be a few more, coming in later on in the week in New York. 864,780 voted Republican. On the Democratic side in New York, there were 1,037,344 votes for Hillary Clinton, 752,739 votes for Bernie Sanders. And on the Republican side, 523,000 Republican votes for Donald Trump, 216,900 for John Kasich, and 125,780 for Ted Cruz. So interestingly, the Democratic vote was much, much larger than the Republican vote in New York, 1,790,000 to 864,780. But the vote total, when you look at it, New York is a much larger state. So you had 2,817,000, I'm sorry for the numbers, but they're interesting, 780 total in New York. In Wisconsin, it was 2.1 million. So I'd like to weave that into the conversation this hour. It seems as though maybe it was because independents could not vote in New York or you had to register earlier, but that seems like a kind of a noteworthy thing. Well, we have two guests this hour, and I would imagine we'll have quite a few phone calls. Joining us the first half of the hour is the executive editor of the Daily Caller. Vince Colonnaise is with us. Vince has been reporting on politics for some time, and his coverage has been in the pages of the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, the Drudge Report. He's appeared as a guest on Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, the Fox Business Network, and CNBC, and on many radio shows. Later in the hour, Joan Walsh, the nation's national affairs correspondent and an MSNBC political analyst. She has given her support to Hillary Clinton. So we're going to be welcoming phone calls during the course of the hour. What do you think? Have we now reduced this to a Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton race? Do you see any way for anybody else to achieve front runner status? Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, where we love to read your comments, is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we are on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. Vince, thanks so much for being with us. Hi.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So it was a big win for Donald Trump, biggest win ever, passing the 50% threshold. Is he now the guy?
Well, he certainly wants to be, and he's posturing that way. Both he and Hillary Clinton at this point are posturing that this is a done deal, that they're headed for being the nominee. But in Trump's case, it's pretty sticky because the reality is whatever the plurality of voters might think, and in this case in New York, the majority, Donald Trump's candidacy as the Republican nominee is clearly not a sure thing, because at this point, you've got both John Kasich and Ted Cruz, who are both mathematically eliminated completely from achieving 1237 before the convention, attempting to sabotage Donald Trump's ability to get to that number, because they want to hold this down below that 1237 number and get to the convention and give it to the Republican Party apparatus to have them vote on who they think should be the nominee in a later ballot race. So Trump's big push now, and New York is a huge part of that, is for him to get to 1237 or somewhere near that before the convention, because Donald Trump has to win on the first ballot. I think most people would agree that if Donald Trump is going to be the nominee, he's going to do it on the first ballot at the Republican convention. Otherwise, what happens is if it goes to second and third ballots, all of these states where Donald Trump has locked up bound delegates or people who are bound to vote for him at the convention will now be free to vote for somebody else. And in many regards, a lot of these people are lifelong Republicans who probably have more of an affinity for the other candidates than they do for Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people have been writing about Indiana. It looks like the upcoming states in the East are going to be favorable for Donald Trump. Does he need a clear-cut victory in Indiana, and could that get him close, very, very close, to what he needs?
It looks like, based on the calendar, it looks like California could be the real moment when we figure out whether or not, which is towards the end of this, if Donald Trump is going to clinch the nomination before the convention. I would say that any state that's experienced a degree of manufacturing drawdown over the past decades, where they feel like where they've seen jobs go from the United States to overseas, where the economy itself has devolved so rapidly and has led to very, very few increases in disposable income and all the measures by which we measure the economy, is often the type of state that's prone to consider Donald Trump or Bernie Sanders, by the way, as a viable person to be president of the United States, because these two guys are speaking to a populist moment, which is that, hey, the United States economy is getting a raw deal. We have all the leverage. Let's fix it. And that's sort of been the Donald Trump message in a place like Indiana. Definitely you could see Trump getting a lot of support from people who feel like that.
Mm-hmm. A lot of commentators made mention last night of Donald Trump being a different kind of guy, reserved, disciplined, presidential. Even some people were talking about his hair that seemed to be better groomed. I mean, they did, seriously.
Yeah. Well, it is defining. Yeah, I think that there's probably something to that. I mean, we've seen him less on Sunday shows where he's faced some more, he's sort of gotten some cross-examination on the details of his policies and, you know, occasionally has stepped into some things that his campaign has been left reeling with or figuring out a way to recover from. My sense is, along with any major campaign reorganization, you're going to see some change in public relations strategy, too. And this suggests, I think, if it's true that Donald Trump is responding to the urgings of his campaign, hey, control yourself, look more presidential, don't accuse, you know, let's not make this about Ted Cruz anymore, he's a done deal, then it suggests that maybe Trump isn't quite so only in his own mind as a lot of people think. Perhaps he is open to advice, and that appears to be, if you believe that he received good advice and changed the way he presented himself on a national stage last night, I think that there's some evidence there that he can take advice, mm-hmm. at least in the short term.
So what happened between Wisconsin and New York? As everybody knows, the Stop Trump movement was very successful in Wisconsin. Ted Cruz won by a pretty hefty margin in this state. What happened in a couple weeks?
Well, for sure, Wisconsin is a unique character in the sense, specifically because of what you do with Wisconsin radio. I think, at least on the national level, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but in the national level, so many times when Wisconsin was discussed, it was like, hey, the especially conservative radio hosts in the state wield so much influence when they, you know, speaking to voters who are really sincere about who their candidates are going to be, and have been who have thought and been influenced by these radio hosts, said, hey, Trump is not the guy. He's not the conservative, and therefore we should not vote for him. And that played a huge role there. Also, in the intervening weeks after Wisconsin, we saw Donald Trump sort of get away from, you know, presidential politics in the sense that he was focused on policies. There were so many campaign distractions that were associated with Donald Trump, up to and including the fact that his campaign manager was involved in a battery case with a reporter. And there were all these sort of things, you know, he made a gaffe on abortion, and those sort of side stories that oftentimes blow up into become, you know, top of the hour news each night, really served as a distraction from the Trump campaign, which had really thrived prior to that on making a lot of issues the centerpiece of the campaign, like building the wall or fixing trade imbalances. All that stuff got lost, and I think I think Trump suffered as a result of it for a little bit. Then he came into New York, his home state, where he was expected to do well. And I think, you know, the numbers prove that if New York is anything like the rest of the calendar, Donald Trump is going to have a pretty good go in the states that are coming up. And Ted Cruz, not so much. I mean, he's being beaten by John Kasich in a lot of polling in some of these follow-on states.
Mm-hmm.
And the calendar, again, is more favorable to Trump going forward and less favorable to Ted Cruz.
So Ted Cruz should have thought twice about those New York values comments.
Sincerely. And, you know, I think at the time, who knows if he was convinced that Donald Trump would continue to be in the power position he is now. He probably saw it as a clever way to attack Hillary Clinton in addition to going after Donald Trump, just make it so like anybody who is anywhere even near New York is not doesn't really know what they might derisively refer to as flyover country. You need to, you know, if you're from New York, you don't understand the rest of the country. And I think he suffered because of that. Certainly, obviously, in New York, where that's an easy thing to play over and over and over. We heard this once before in Iowa. You remember Donald Trump famously uttered, "How stupid are the people of Iowa?" when he was upset with some polling numbers. And boy, did Iowa never heard the end of Donald Trump saying that either.
Mm-hmm. I started the hour with some numbers here, which I find interesting. 2,817,780 voters in the primary in New York. In Wisconsin, a much smaller state, 2.1 million voters. Is that just because you have to register in New York and you had to register pretty early for the Democratic or Republican vote?
Well, you know, I think Sanders' campaign, Bernie Sanders' campaign, is saying that there was something like 3 million people that were locked out of being able to vote because of the rules. And, you know, I'm pretty convinced, and I think most people are, that Bernie Sanders would have done much, much better in a situation where either that was an open primary in the state of New York or had something closer to same-day registration. And it's kind of interesting. I do think it's sort of an interesting scenario, especially for the Democratic Party, that a party who, especially when they're campaigning against Republicans, campaign so much on voter access and that there should be no barriers to people who earnestly want to vote, have a system where they can't.
Unless you
registered in October of last year as a registered Democrat, which many of these independent voters who support Bernie Sanders aren't, then you had no chance of voting for Bernie, and that's what left. It's in huge part a huge help for Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also true that New York is really a heavily Democratic state, right? Hillary had over 1 million votes. She had more than all the Republican candidates combined, and mm-hmm. Bernie Sanders almost did as well. This is a Democratic state.
Right. They were definitely helped by that. And that's, I mean, I think it was pretty clear. The conversations that we were all having leading up to New York involved only three candidates. It was Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, and Donald Trump. There was very little conversation about Ted Cruz and John Kasich other than what they might do in terms of slowing Donald Trump's delegate momentum down. And, you know, for sure, New York is known as a Democratic state, but had the ability for independents to participate in the process in a more robust way, specifically allowing them to vote, been included, first of all, I think you just would have seen just a real, real race and a very much a time for Hillary to begin sweating about Bernie Sanders' inclusion. But now she's looking at him disappearing, or hoping he does.
Right. And what about independent support in New York for Donald Trump?
Certainly. That would have played a huge role because Donald Trump has gotten, whatever you think of Trump's policies, he's sort of, at his core, he's much more of a moderate than he is a conservative. And he's often attracted independents across the board. And I think, I tend to believe that Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump have some, if you look at that Venn diagram, there's a huge intersection of voters who can see themselves supporting either of those guys.
We're going to go to phone calls. Our guest the first half hour of the program is Vince Colonnaise, and he is the executive editor of the Daily Caller. Done a lot of reporting that's appeared in many publications, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Washington Post, Drudge Report. He's been on a lot of television shows, national shows, and radio programs as well. Later in the hour, Joan Walsh will join us, the nation's national affairs correspondent. She has expressed her support for Hillary Clinton. So we're looking at New York, as we promised we would, and how they voted yesterday, and welcoming your phone calls. We have a couple people calling in now, and if you'd like to call in, that would be just dandy. Here's our number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is @KDunnShow. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, lots of phone calls coming in, starting with Claire in Madison for you, Vince. Hi, Claire.
Hi, Kathleen and Vince. Maybe I'm really an idealist, Kathleen, but I totally, well, first of all, I love your show.
Thanks, Claire.
And I believe that public radio should be like the gold standard for media coverage, especially these days when we've been talking about this for months and months about how media has been affecting the election so far, how Trump has gotten all this free airtime, et cetera, et cetera. I was very upset this morning, Kathleen and Vince, when I heard only coverage about the 125,000 voters that could not vote and nothing else. And there were other huge problems I heard about on a very reputable show yesterday afternoon, such as 70 machines were broken, scanners. Polling places were not opening on time. They were all supposed to open at 6 a.m. And I also heard that some people even did an emergency federal lawsuit because it was so bad. I heard nothing about any of that this morning.
Vince.
Yeah, there were definitely some issues in New York that I think were irking a lot of people, especially among, like I said, Bernie Sanders supporters. You know, there was some mysterious drop from the Board of Elections about 125,000 Democratic voters in Brooklyn, and then 63,000 voters were added. And it's totally – and there's all these question marks that appear, especially in the voting process, about what is going on and why are people still not being able to get in, the lines were so long, et cetera. So, yeah, there's – voting problems were a huge issue. And like I said before, just the idea that the Democratic Party's process doesn't include allowing people – you know, some proximity to actually voting near Election Day, that in and of itself was a problem, whether or not it was met, those are the rules. You have a lot of people who are Democratic-leaning or certainly are interested in supporting Bernie Sanders who couldn't because they needed to register many, many, many months ago in order to even participate in the process.
Is this unusual in New York elections to have these many people who couldn't vote, or do you hear this in other elections in New York?
Well, I have not followed New York politics long enough to give you an educated answer other than to say that certainly in states with closed primaries and advanced registration, this tends to be an issue when people don't know what's going on. I mean, yesterday we saw Google searches explode, how people could support Bernie Sanders. And obviously, if you're voting in the same day in New York and you want to do that and you're looking up those answers, you're obviously far too late in the process.
Right, way too late. Thank you very much, Claire, for your call. Gary in Madison, hi.
Yeah, hi. You know, a lot of us are getting awfully sick and tired of this whining of the Sanders supporters. He spent almost three times as much money. Are you aware of that?
Yes.
Hillary did in New York, and she had him for lunch. I mean, 16 points. Now, you talk about things being unfair. I think these caucuses where he waltzed around Wyoming and so forth were unfair to her, very unfair, where you show up and you get persuaded to go one way or the other in a room. These primaries are much tougher for him, and it's going to be, believe me, just as tough in Pennsylvania for him. Thanks. I'll take your comments off the air.
Thanks, Gary.
Yeah, I'd say that in the case of Bernie Sanders, he has – despite the fact that he has such an overwhelming money advantage when it comes to just personal small donations, which it seems like every time he steps up to a microphone, his donations explode. People see him on his supporters see him on national television, and they're either making phone calls and phone banking for the guy or giving him money. He also is running sort of against the institutional issues that exist in the Democratic Party. At this point, if he wants to win the nomination, he basically has to convert establishment Democrats, the superdelegates, to even get the support to push him through as the nominee. And that seems like an impossible task when so many of them have been either longtime Hillary supporters,
right,
or have already publicly pledged their support to her.
Yeah, as Joan will say, because she attended a lot of events, rallies for both candidates in Brooklyn, Clinton always surrounds herself with established Democratic office holders that they support her,
right,
in huge numbers. It's hard to imagine that those superdelegates are going to switch.
That's right. And Hillary's made a part of her campaign now, regularly mentioning that Democrats want to support a Democrat and that Bernie Sanders,
right,
has been an independent for so long that he doesn't really qualify.
Yeah. Thanks, Gary, very much for your call. Did he outspend her 3-1 in New York? Do you know?
I don't know, but I know that he's had just such a tremendous amount of energy for his campaign and a lot of money coming in all the time. He's been about as aggressive as you can be. And obviously his support, I think the demographic breakdown in the New York the New York result was pretty interesting, and it continues a trend, which is that Hillary Clinton is winning with women and minorities, whereas Bernie Sanders is winning with white people and young people. And especially the young people, it really, I think the Democratic Party is probably being very cautious as they move into the general election phase, because the last thing they want to do is alienate a bunch of new voters
right.
who could help perpetuate the existence of the Democratic Party for years to
yeah.
come.
So it's April 20th. The New York primary is over. What happens now with Bernie Sanders? What happens with Ted Cruz and John Kasich? Are they finished, really?
Well, they don't show any signs of abetting. I mean, their goal is to, in all of their cases, they've made public their goal of pushing forward to the convention. Now, I think that in John Kasich and Ted Cruz's case, that's the most realistic thing, that they are actually being sincere when they say that. I don't know how long Bernie Sanders intends to push. I mean, we always hear candidates saying, I'm going to be in the next state. I'm going to be in the next state, because the last thing you want to do is signal that you have any intention of dropping out. Bernie Sanders, though, he may still push. I mean, this guy has come pretty close in a race where I don't think many people even expect him to perform as well as he did. He ran specifically to make his ideas more public. And now it looks like he's running to be president of the United States. And Hillary Clinton cannot be happy about that.
And what about Republicans? How happy are they going to be with Donald Trump?
There's total chaos in the future. I don't know what way that's going to transpire. But clearly there's some huge fissures within the Republican Party
mm-hmm.
that a lot of people are still trying to wrap their minds around. But the reality is, how are Republicans, establishment Republicans who have joined this Never Trump movement, going to reckon with the plurality of voters who've come forward either for the first time or who have been longtime Republican voters who are backing Donald Trump and say to them, yeah, he's not going to be the nominee? The idea that so many people who could have their votes alienated because you have an establishment group deciding on the nominee cannot be good for the future of the Republican Party.
Vince, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Yeah, we'll chat with you again as the months go ahead. Vince, our guest, and he is the executive editor of the Daily Caller. He's published in a number of papers, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, Drudge Report, all over television as well. Vince Colonnais, our guest. Joan Walsh is going to be joining us next. And Joan, of course, national affairs correspondent for The Nation, MSNBC political analyst. We will hear from her momentarily and welcome more phone calls, more attention to the Democratic side now in Hillary Clinton's big win in New York yesterday with Joan. First, though, just a little montage of those who won in the New York primary yesterday on the Democratic side and also the Republican side.
I can think of nowhere that I would rather have this victory.
There's no place like home.
Behind me, I have to say, we have some of our great businessmen of the world. Carl Icahn is here someplace. Where's Carl? Howard Lorber, Ben LeBeau, the great Steve Roth.
And to the mayor of New York. And our borough presidents and our city council members, and to our governor, our senators, our congressional delegation. This campaign is the only one, Democrat or Republican, to win more than 10 million votes.
We have won millions of more votes than Senator Cruz, millions and millions of more votes than Governor Kasich.
More voices remain to be heard, and tomorrow it's on to Connecticut, Delaware, Maryland,
Indiana. I'm going to Pennsylvania. I will be all over. So we're going to celebrate for about 2 hours. Then early in the morning, I get up and we begin working again. Thank you, everybody. And thank you, New York. We love New York.
Joan Walsh, our guest now, the nation's national affairs correspondent and MSNBC political analyst, author of What's the Matter with White People? Finding Our Way in the Next America. She is a regular on Hardball with Chris Matthews and All In with Chris Hayes and has appeared on many other national shows. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Joan. The number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, and that's @KDunnShow. Hello, Joan.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Good. Thanks very much for being with us. So you were attending a lot of events, a lot of Clinton rallies yesterday, as we were looking at, and Bernie Sanders said that he thought he had a chance at winning New York. You probably saw on the ground that maybe he didn't have this. You talked about the enthusiasm. Everybody talks about the enthusiasm for Bernie, but there is a different kind of enthusiasm that you saw in New York. What was it?
It's an enthusiasm that certainly goes back to, it goes back to the first, let's call it the first Clinton administration, for sure, where she was the advocate for urban issues, for women, for children. She was perceived as more liberal than her husband, going back to her work with the Children's Defense Fund. You genuinely meet people in New York, I know they exist in other states too, but who remember her work with the Children's Defense Fund, remember her advocacy within the White House for their issues. And so, you know, she really, it was a coming home. People mock her as a carpetbagger. She did move to New York to run for its Senate seat. We got to be honest about that. But, you know, she really won people over with her hard work. And so when you go to her events, she doesn't try for big open air rallies. I'm not saying if she tried she would get the numbers that Senator Sanders does. She wouldn't. I would confidently predict that she would not. But what I started to see, and I saw this in other states as well, but really in New York, is that, you know, the exuberance of his rallies and the size is matched in a different way with a kind of intensity of emotion and dedication to her, so that, you know, you really do find people who are literally in tears, you know, at these events because of what she means to them. And, you know, she did something else that I think it's hard for Senator Sanders to do because he has valid critiques of the Democratic Party, but she really ran on her record as a Democrat. You know, you played that clip from last night, you know, which is almost mind-numbing as she walks through the borough presidents and the city council members and da-da-da-da-da. She doesn't forget a name. Right. She lists them all. She embraces them all. And that paid off for her. This is a place where membership in the Democratic Party means a lot, and people are proud of it. They don't think, you know, even though we've definitely got a few office holders who might be going to jail, you know, they don't think of themselves as belonging to a corrupt party that's in the, you know, that belongs to Wall Street. They see it very, very differently. And I think Senator Sanders didn't get that, and his surrogates really didn't get it.
In the piece you wrote yesterday, surprise, New York Democrats like the Democratic Party, you also, the other part of the headline is, and the Sanders campaign is making enemies with its attacks.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for one thing, he had a great rally in the Bronx. But he was introduced by Spike Lee and Rosario Dawson, and I think the only Bronx resident who was actually on the stage with him was a rapper. You know, he didn't learn how to work the party. He did have a few endorsers. He did have endorsers, but he never really showcased them. The other thing, though, that I wrote about that I found actually really disturbing was that, you know, we had a situation here where Sanders supporters regularly showed up at Clinton events and tried to disrupt them and really tried to mess with Clinton supporters. And they met their match in Washington Heights the other day where, you know, a lot of mostly young, you know, some of them Latino, some of them white, Sanders supporters just started, you know, coming. They came to a Clinton rally, a Get Out the Vote rally. It was kind of a street festival. It was very lovely, lots of, you know, families with kids. Clinton herself showed up, kind of a surprise. And they just started jeering and holding up signs and almost picking, not physical fights by any means, but kind of fights with the Clinton supporters. And I just thought, I saw women who tried to reason with them just get increasingly turned off. And several people said to me, we've never seen anything like this. Democrats, we fight, we have primaries. You go to your rally, I'll go to mine, we'll come together in November. And they really were stunned at the level of vitriol, and that anybody would go out of their way to disrupt another Democrat's rally. I mean, Senator Sanders did not authorize this, but he hasn't really reined in the enmity of his supporters either. So that may turn out to be more of an issue as this race kind of goes on.
Yeah. Let's talk about this other issue in the Democratic Party right now and how she handles it and how the party handles it moving forward. The other striking thing about this election, she did win a large victory yesterday in New York. But again, when you look at those numbers of 16, particularly to 29-year-olds, it's 73%, 74% for Sanders, and it's true in every single caucus or primary. Why is that, do you think, Joan? What does that mean for the future of the Democratic Party? And what does it mean, because she probably will be the nominee here, for her in November?
I think she's really got to pay attention to it and probably pay more attention to it. I think that Senator Sanders is speaking to a profound sense of pessimism about the future. The student loan debt, she knows about it, she talks about it, but the sense of dislocation and dispossession is profound, and I'm not sure she's taking it in at the level that she needs to. I don't want to sound condescending, but it's also true that I think he speaks in very colorful, broad generalities, and you have to have your heart broken in politics a few times before you realize that the revolution is not happening in on either on April 19th or in November. That political change takes decades and generations sometimes, and that Hillary Clinton started out as a idealist who wanted to bring change quickly. She worked for George McGovern, who lost in a landslide. She's learned the hard way that you get change in increments, and that's just not a very exciting message. Senator Sanders' message of immediate change and revolution resonates among people who want to see change and don't know how hard it is. And as a Clinton supporter, and I am one, I get tongue-tied, because you find yourself saying to young people, life is harder than you think, and that's not a really good message either. So I think that she will win them over time, but I don't know that she'll ever have the enthusiasm that he has.
Mm-hmm. And on the other side, do you think it is Trump now?
I do think it's Trump. I know all the obstacles in his way, and I think it's very possible that they try to take it away from him. But I just think, after Wisconsin, the story was he's in deep trouble.
Right.
And it wasn't just the Wisconsin results. It was also just, a string of his terrible comments about punishing women who have abortions, his campaign manager being, arrested for battery. There were just a string of really awful events for him that made it seem like, okay, his lack of experience politically is catching up, and the voters are catching up. And the smart voters of the state of Wisconsin, of which I used to be one, are figuring this out. That was a very satisfying storyline, and I fell for it myself for a few days, but I don't think it turned out to be true. I think that, he's continuing to amass delegates. He probably won't get over the top, but he's going to get very close. And I think he's going to get too close for anyone to really take it away from him without a terrible, terrible kind of party-destroying fight.
Mm-hmm.
So every state that he wins, like New York, and I don't know that he's going to win another one quite like New York, but, he's going to win more victories, and Ted Cruz can look forward to, certainly Indiana. But I just don't, I don't think they have a lot of hope for stopping Trump.
So to the really important question, did he have a new hairdo last night?
I kind of thought so.
I did,
but,
too.
I can't believe he would vary on something as important as that. His face still looked the same color, though, so he's sticking with that. Okay, now you made me get really petty.
Let's go to phone calls. 800-486-8655. Joan Walsh is our guest this half hour, and Nate in Appleton is our first caller for you, Joan. Hi, Nate.
Joan, I've loved your work on Salon and on MSNBC. Just a couple points. I'd like you to discuss the urban-rural divide. I also think it's interesting that if it is Clinton versus Trump, these are the two candidates that have the highest negatives in history.
Right.
But, you know, for Sanders people to get behind Clinton, I think it's critical that everybody, you know, takes a look at what the Clinton administration and Democrats achieved when Clinton was in office. He created more jobs in 8 years than the Republicans did in 20 before the economy collapsed. He took the largest deficits in history and turned them into the largest surpluses. If we continue to tax and spend as the same percentage of GDP that we did under Clinton, the entire national debt would have been paid off in 2011. So the difference between Democrats and Republicans has never been huger. And for the people who are unhappy with the dysfunction in Washington, it's critical that people understand the day after the election, the Senate Republicans and House Republicans said, no matter what this guy does, we're going to vote against him. And it's interesting that the state exchanges and the individual mandate were both in John McCain's Republican platform. So even when Obama said, I surrender, I'll do it your way, the Republican Party has been obstructing the normal business of government for 8 years.
Thanks, Nate, for your call. Joan.
Nate, that was a mouthful, and I don't know quite where to start, except where I will start where you ended, which is something Kathleen and I have talked about before, that this Republican Party has become so extreme that it has begun to reject its own ideas. And you're right, the individual mandate is such an idea. Another thing that was a, you know, kind of a Clinton era expansion of the earned income tax credit when he did welfare reform, which, you know, was unpopular and is coming up for more attention nowadays. But when he did quote reform welfare, he also was able to build an enormous expansion of the earned income tax credit, which you only get if you hold a job, but if you're a very low-wage worker. And this was a Republican idea. Jerry Ford signed it into law. And it's an example, I think it came from originally from Milton Friedman. It's an example of, you know, Democrats, whether it's Bill Clinton or Barack Obama, saying, hey, you know, Republicans have some good ideas about what the market does well. Let's say big government can't do everything. The market does some things well. Let's try that stuff. Cap and trade, you know, to deal with climate change. Another great example. And as Democrats have embraced those ideas, Republicans have run farther to the right. You know, so she does talk about that stuff. In terms of bringing people together, you know, I'm hoping that it's going to take a lot of great Senate candidates as well, that there will be a lot of things to motivate Sanders voters in addition to, you know, hopefully seeing some of Hillary Clinton's good, you know, good points, that there will be great candidates. You know, in Wisconsin, you've got Russ Feingold. I say that as a Democrat, that are going to help the Sanders people kind of reckon with, okay, there's a lot to be, you know, there's a lot to work for as a Democrat. And I think she's going to win the vast majority of them over, including the young people. Mm. I really do.
What about this point? And it's an interesting one, that should you have Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump as the nominees, you do have two people who are really not very popular. I mean, their favorability ratings are not great. Their unfavorable ratings are in the 50s.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, as a Democrat, I can defend her. I think that that's the result of, you know, 25 years of concerted right-wing attacks on her that are unrelenting, whether it's, you know, Travelgate, Filegate, all these gates when she was in the White House that never amounted to anything, through Benghazi, through the email controversy, which, you know, she did bring on herself. I'm not uncritical of her. But, and, you know, Donald Trump, his negatives are for some very, very different reasons, largely of his own doing, not a crusade against him. But, you know, at the end of the day, they are winning their primaries, and they are, you know, they're getting the most votes. So I think people, Americans, have the capacity. It's great when we can fall in love with a candidate, but they're also capable of voting for people that, you know, they might not think are the best people in the world, but they think are effective. And, you know, obviously, I think Trump is getting some support from people who don't think he's a very nice person. That might be part of, you know, for some people, I think that's part of his draw. You know, similarly for Clinton, people even who, you know, don't like her picked her as, you know, a fierce competitor and somebody who's going to get the job done. So it'll be very interesting, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, whose negatives, if somebody's negatives lessen, or if it stays that high. It's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, it will be. Joan Walsh is our guest this half hour, and she is national affairs correspondent for The Nation, MSNBC political analyst. We have some lines open. Nate, thanks for your call. 800-486-8655. Email talk@WPR.org. Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're talking about the results of yesterday's New York primary on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Joan Walsh is our guest. We should also mention, which I always like to say, people have Wisconsin connections. Joan is a graduate of UW-Madison and went to high school in Shorewood, Wisconsin, so her Wisconsin connections are strong. Let's go to Sebastian, our next caller in Winona, Minnesota. Hi, Sebastian.
Hi, thank you for having me on.
Sure.
I just wanted to bring up a point I haven't heard yet on your show. I hear a lot of people saying that they want Bernie supporters to start voting for Clinton if he loses, but there's actually a big movement within the millennials called Bernie or Bust, and I happen to be a part of that movement. I think a lot of people don't realize this, but I think about a third of Bernie supporters are probably going to start voting Green Party if he loses, and it might divide up the Democrat vote like a substantial amount. So.
And why wouldn't you vote for Hillary Clinton or for Donald Trump, Sebastian?
Well, to me, it's all about money and politics. I don't usually vote. This is the first time I've really started getting into politics, and it was thanks to Bernie.
Mm-hmm.
I do respect Trump because he, you know, he's running a campaign on his own money. But I don't really like Clinton because she's a little bit too pro-war, and that's something that's really, you know, it's dear to my heart and my family. So,
All right. Thanks very much for your call, Joan.
I respect that, Sebastian. I have endorsed her, but in my endorsement, I said that, you know, she's a little bit too hawkish for my ideal candidate. There are a lot of things I like about her, but you know, I would also say that it's important to get involved in politics and work for people that you believe in, and maybe you believe in the Green Party, but you know, we don't have a representative democracy. We don't have proportional representation in the sense that a third party candidate can get some share of the seats in the legislature or in the Congress, and therefore the third party vote always hurts the person, the party, the candidate that they're closest to. So, you know, the reason we had an Iraq war was that Ralph Nader ran and insisted there was no difference between Gore and Bush. Having lived through that, I'm going to, you know, do my utmost to talk to every possible Green voter I know and beg them to reconsider and vote for Hillary Clinton and work to keep her honest, work to keep her hawkish tendencies in check, work to make sure that we build an anti-war movement that makes clear the cost of these interventions. There are lots of things you can do besides contribute to, you know, the presidency of Donald Trump. That's my opinion, but I respect that you have yours. The last thing I'll say, though, is that in New York yesterday, they polled that question, and only 13% of Sanders voters said they would not vote for Clinton. So Bernie or Bust is it's a vocal movement. It's got a lot of clout on social media. It's not numerically, it's not very strong, and I think it will get less stronger as the election approaches.
Have you heard any talk about, and do you think there's a possibility of Bernie Sanders doing third party?
No. He has said from the beginning he would not. He said as recently, things have been very testy here in New York, but he said, you know, when after the flap over whether she's qualified, he said he would support her and endorse her. She has said she will support and endorse him. You know, Bernie is a good man. He's not my candidate, but he doesn't want to destroy the Democratic Party. He doesn't want to, you know, contribute to a Trump presidency. And he understands the history I just walked through. And, you know, he had people in his cabinet, you know, arguing the pros and cons of a third-party run versus a Democratic primary run. And he went with the people advising on the Democratic primary.
Sebastian, thanks. Janice in La Crosse, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Hi, and good afternoon to your guests. I'm Catholic. I'm pro-life, but I think I would probably vote for Donald Trump, and I am so tired of this hardcore political stuff, you know, politically correct. I mean, just give us the truth. I mean, he comes right off straight out, you know, which is refreshing for us. You know, I think most people are just so tired of these hardcore politicians, you know, Hillary and old Bernie. I don't know. It just like, no more of this stuff. And then they said in England, my friend said, you know, in England, they run a campaign for 3 months.
Right.
They give them a limit on their how much they can spend on their, you know, advertising or whatever. And then they're done. No more. And I'm like, oh, wouldn't that be a blessing? Wouldn't that be refreshing? I mean, this kind of these lobbyists, these hardcore politicians, this whole delicate thing, you can see what a fiasco this is. What a joke.
All right, Janice, thanks very much for your call. Trump supporter there. I'm wondering, as I hear from Trump supporters, you hear his unfavorable ratings, particularly among women, how he probably just could never be elected president. Is there a way for Trump to become president, do you think, Joan?
I think it's very hard. I think there are a lot of, you know, fed-up people like Janice, and I think that, you know, Hillary Clinton probably has to put more time into understanding that and seeing, you know, the frustration that's led to both the Sanders and Trump phenomena. There really is a sense that the game is rigged and that, you know, politics is a profession that's controlled by the insiders, mm-hmm. and that's a problem. But I think that when you have, you know, 70+% of women, 70+% of Latinos, of African Americans, saying they won't vote for him, or howling negative opinions. You know, I don't think you can get elected with numbers like that, especially once a real concerted campaign begins, and once Republicans start endorsing Hillary Clinton, because you know Chrissy Todd Whitman of New Jersey has done it. It will be a thing. Next September, October, it will be a real thing.
Yeah. Her idea about 3 months, you know, how about 6 months at least? These go on forever.
I honestly would love that. And I, you know, I say that as somebody who makes my living off how long it is. But,
yeah.
Man, I'm tired of hearing myself already. So, you know, we can agree on that one.
All right. Judy in New Berlin. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling. I'm a senior. And I know that there's young people out there that are for Bernie Sanders. My husband and I are both Bernie Sanders supporters, but I know if he doesn't win the vote, that I will vote for Hillary. But my husband he said I'm not going to vote at all then, because he just doesn't want to support Hillary. I've heard this from other people who are Bernie Sanders supporters, so I'm afraid of that. That's going to hurt the Democratic vote.
All right. Thanks, Judy. I just want to get one more call in, and then Joan can respond to both because we're short on time. Cal, we wanted to get your comments, though. Hi.
Yeah. I'm 66 years old, and I vote in every election, local primaries, locals, every primary. I'm sick and tired of hearing people in their mid 20s, early 30s, saying this is the first time they've ever voted. If everybody gets out and votes, then we can take over the political system.
All right, thanks. Joan, about 30 seconds.
Yeah, I've got to endorse that. I think there's a real fetishizing of the younger voter, and you know, God bless them. I have one in my household, but you know, the disdain for the opinions of older people, in the sense that, you know, it's suicide that Hillary Clinton is winning with the support of voters who are 45 and older, is it's another kind of ism. And to the caller who says her husband won't vote for Hillary, she's got a lot of time, and her community, they have a lot of time to talk to him about what the future holds under a Trump presidency. I bet he's going to vote for Hillary.
Thank you, Joan Walsh. Thanks very much for being with us again.
Thank you, Kathleen. I enjoyed it.
Joan Walsh, the nation's national affairs correspondent. She's an MSNBC political analyst as well, and she is the author of What's the Matter with White People? Finding Our Way in the Next America. She went to UW-Madison and to school in Shorewood as well. Thanks very much to Chris Molina for producing this hour and to Scotty Myers for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and then we will return and talk about MATC and their new program will be launched next fall.